Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group call. This is Corinne, and as always, I'm just really excited that you are here showing up as we share these ideas and they strengthen in our minds as we collectively and fearlessly hand over our lives to God to be directed, to be guided, that we awaken to the self that we all share. So let's begin with a brief meditation, bringing your attention from the external to the internal. Just allowing your attention to settle in on a space deep within you. And it's from this space that we listen, that we are guided, and it's in this space that we rest. We always have it to return to as we are sent on busy doings out into the world as we fulfill our function. So in your mind, just imagining with open hands, an open heart, and an open mind, calling on Holy Spirit, doing so together, knowing that our call is answered. May we remember the truth. May our brothers remember the truth. May every brother who is fearful and struggling right now have that glimmer in their heart, because we are turning to truth, we are turning to love, we are affirming the fact that only the truth is true and nothing else is true. We are safe and healed and home. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. So I sort of referenced, for those of you who were on the line before we started recording, Tanya was sharing a quote from the course about the quiet center. The quiet center of the storm, this place of rest within us, and it's a place that we can always turn to, and from this place we are sent out to go on our busy doings in the world, and it's to this place that we return to rest because it's always there. And I'm so grateful that Tanya shared that quote from the course, because it speaks to, again, I think as I bring my mind to this teaching, I'm thinking of some other, actually Robert Perry and Emily Bennington from the Circle, saying that we have this belief, this sort of passed down belief that the Course is not about behavior. And that quote right there is about being sent on busy doings. And we're doing it from a place of guidance, not from a place of small self. So I'm very grateful for that. So, we're going to read tonight about the self. I'm very excited about this section. It's a good one. I'll repeat the page references one more time. If you have the CE, please go to page 910. If you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's chapter 31, part 5. In the Sparkle edition, it's page 713. And in the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it is Chapter 31, Part 5. All right. the concept of the self, or self-concept versus self, depending on which edition you have. The learning of the world is built upon a concept of the self adjusted to the world's reality. It fits it well, for this an image is that suits a world of shadows and illusions. Here it walks at home, where what it sees is one with it. The building of a concept of the self is what the learning of the world is for. This is its purpose, that you come without a self and make one as you go along. And by the time you reach quote-unquote maturity, you have perfected it to meet the world on equal terms, at one with its demands. A concept of the self is made by you. It bears no likeness to yourself at all. It is an idol made to take the place of your reality as son of God. Boom. So, the whole world, it's mid-paragraph, this is its purpose. So the entire purpose of the world is that we pretend that we're coming into it without a self so we can make one up. So we can make up these ego identities, these animated cardboard cutouts that we then identify with and think we are, and that this is all that we are. And as we mature, as we get a stronger ego, we are then able to take care of ourselves. We're able to, you know, be self-sufficient, all those things that are equated with quote-unquote maturity. And this paragraph is just not holding anything back. It's just saying flat out, a concept of the self is made by you, our concept. So let's try this on with our names in your mind. I'll use my name. I want you to use yours. Corinne was made up by me. And if you just think about that for yourself, we all made up these small s senses of selves. Who we really are is not Corinne, is not insert your name. We are the Son of God. And we've chosen to come here to forget that, to make a self so that we can play this little game of separation in, and hope that it will satisfy us, as we know it never does. It's just so powerful. It says this sense of self. So Corinne, and insert your own name, bears no likeness to yourself at all. It bears the self that we've made bears no likeness to yourself at all, because if you think about it, this body dies, the body ages, the body does all these things here, and who we really are, it does not age, it does not die, it doesn't grow old, it doesn't change, all these things. And what we've made here are idols. So the body is an idol made to take the place of our reality as Son of God. Boom. Anybody want to add anything before we read paragraph 2? Or ask a question. Did I hear? I'm not sure if I heard two people. Was that Sue?
Yes, it was me.
I thought
somebody else had spoken first.
No? Was there somebody else who wanted to speak? I'll just check in real quick. Actually, Dave, I think that's your line. I think you're off of mute. If you wouldn't mind muting yourself, that'd be perfect. Thank you so much. Sue, you're up.
Yes, I was just thinking how different the Course is from all the other spiritual teachings that you hear that say we came here to remember who we are.
Mm-hmm.
We came here with this sense of we forget, and then we come here to remember. It's a process of remembering where the Course is. We actually came here so we could forget our true self. Not remember our true self.
Right. Well, repurposed by the Holy Spirit, we're going to, you know, we're here to remember. But yes, that initial, the initial reason we came was to forget, to be that
right,
big hiding
right.
place from God.
Yeah, like this plan of, I'll go down there, forget who I am, so I can relearn and grow my soul and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, yes.
Yes, you're spot on. Yep. Anybody else? Thank you, Sue. Let's read paragraph number 2. The concept of the self the world would teach is not the thing that it appears to be. For it is made to serve two masters, but one of which the mind can recognize. The first presents the face of innocence, the aspect acted on. It is this face that smiles and charms and even seems to love. It searches for companions, and it looks at times with pity on the suffering and sometimes offers solace. It believes that it is good within an evil world. This aspect can grow angry, for the world is wicked and unable to provide the love and shelter innocence deserves. And so this face is often wet with tears at the injustices of, this face is often wet with tears at the injustices the world accords to those who would be generous and good. I have to read the next paragraph because it just flows. This aspect, so this face of innocence, never makes the first attack. But every day, 100 little things make small assaults upon its innocence, provoking it to irritation, and at last to open insult and abuse. The face of innocence, the concept of the self, the face of innocence, the concept of the self so proudly wears, can tolerate attack and self-defense. For is it not a well-known fact the world deals harshly with defenseless innocence? No one who makes a picture of himself omits this face, for he has need of it. The other side he does not want to see. But it is here the learning of the world has set its sights. For it is here the world's reality is set. To see to it, the idol lasts. So this face of innocence, you know, it's funny. I have my mom's voice coming to my mind. My mom always talks about, her name's Susan. She always talks about being the good Susan and, like, how she's always tried to be the good, quote-unquote, good Susan. And that's, and you know, she's talking, naming that as her ego, because my mom's a course student too. The trying to be good, you know, trying to be this quote-unquote good person, which we're being, I mean, as we shed the self and as we come and allow the love that is within us to come out, we can't help but extend true goodness. But that's coming from a much different and deeper place than what this is talking about with this face of innocence. The face of innocence is of the ego, and it's the quote-unquote good ego. It's being nice. It's giving people the benefit of the doubt. It's, it's just... Even the spiritual ego is like, I feel like, that good part of the ego. And it's this part that it's saying, it never makes, it says, I'm not going to attack, but if you attack me, then I'll definitely defend myself, because there's the belief that we hold deep down that the world is harsh to defenseless innocence, whereas, you know, the Course is teaching us that our safety lies in our defenseless innocence. It says, toward the end of this the paragraph we just concluded with, the other side he does not want to see. So the other side of this face of innocence we'll be reading about in the next section, but this is the shadow side. This is the dark side. This, we've talked about this in many different ways already on the call. It's the side that has the socially unacceptable, fleeting scraps of meanness, the scraps of fear, you know, as the Course in different editions refers to both of those things, scraps of meanness, scraps of fear, in all the talk that we've done surrounding, this is about racism. This is about hidden racist systems and beliefs that we don't want to see, we don't want to acknowledge. So the other side is really dark and really ugly, and it's just the other side of the same exact ego coin, and it's to be undone, but we have to be willing to look at this. So anyway, we're focused here first on this face of innocence, and we're going to be reading more. Before I do that, any questions or comments?
Yes. Hi, Corinne. It's Cheryl.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I have a question that came up, and I hope it doesn't go off track of what you just said, but what you said made me think of it, so I hope it's going along
go
with
for
that.
It.
I was having this question come up during the week where I noticed that what tends to sort of happen in course community online is that people will say something along the lines of that when people are being mean, okay, people are being like attacking, and then you react to it by either pointing it out or getting upset that somehow you caused it, or I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but it's like almost like they're pointing, the people that are attacking are pointing the finger back at you. Now this
that it's like your projection.
Yeah, this didn't happen to me, but I keep seeing it happen to other people, and I feel so bad for them because I think, oh, gosh, what a trigger that is, because it's like to put them in this frustrating place of going, I'm not, like almost like attacking them and saying you're not spiritual enough to not even see that they're attacking you. Like somehow if your ego wasn't calling it to you, that you wouldn't even notice that you were being attacked. And so I don't know if that's using the course against someone or what that is. So what would this, how would the course answer that, I wonder?
So that's a great question. And I'm glad you brought it up because I'm sure other people on the call, and I think I've probably mentioned this here and there, like I think that there are some Course in Miracles groups online on Facebook that are vicious. Like,
yeah.
My friend Emily said this, like, I leave the group and I want to go take a shower. Like, it's that. Bleh. And there's a lot of that, you know, back and forth. And I do, because I've seen the Course used as a weapon in my own family, and I've done it too, I'm sure. I feel like I can, you know, then see it elsewhere also. So I go back to the fact that we've overemphasized the definition of a miracle as a shift in perception. We've gone up into our heads, this is all coming from me, you're my projection, you're, you know, if you're seeing it, you know, it's because, you know, you're the one doing the projection, whatever. We've gone so up in our heads that we've lost the equally, and I'd say right now, if not more important definition of a miracle. Of course, the shifts are just as important, but like that miracles are expressions of love. So if we're not loving our brother, if we're not, you know, expressing love to our brother, and that doesn't mean people-pleasing, it doesn't mean, you know, that you got to sugarcoat everything. There's this difference in coming from attack versus coming from a space of love. And what I see is a lot of posts sometimes that feel to me like they're coming from a space of attack. Now, is that my perception? Always. It's like, you know, we do always have to bring it back to our own mind. And at the same time, I think there's also the dynamic of coming from a space of attack, of using the Course, you know, as a weapon to bash each other over our heads, you know, with it. And I do think that we've largely neglected the fact that miracles are literal expressions of love. So I do think that, like, both are at play, but, you know, when I see those things, like, I'm, first of all, most of the time, I don't feel called to engage. I do, you know, I am willing to hand it over. That's how I handle it, but I don't feel good about those types of situations on Facebook because, like, this is what new students unknowingly oftentimes walk into when they find, like, you know, the biggest Course in Miracles Facebook group on, you know, on Facebook.
Yeah.
So those are just a few of my thoughts.
I'm following you, and can I bring up one to add to that? Okay,
yeah.
So I've even seen it been written, if you see it, then you're, I don't remember how they said it, but basically if you see it, then you're it. And then the other thing is this, I want to add to the question is, what if you see it, like I'm sitting there reading these comments and I'm like, ooh, but what if I see it, but I don't go into attack?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just seeing that somebody's attacking their brother, and I'm not going, oh, I feel justified to attack them.
Right.
So you
see it as a call for love instead. So
yeah, I see it, and I'll go, oh my gosh, this person is, like, really confused. And then I ended up leaving the group because I just felt like, why would I want to put myself in this environment every day to see that? And I noticed that when people would say, oh, I can't deal with you guys, I'm going to leave, then, ooh, people would just pounce and say, you're so triggered by the ego that you have to leave. And so then they shame them for wanting to leave.
For that, right.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. It was very confusing to me because I was like, I don't feel like that's true, that if you see it, that you're, okay, thank you.
Well, if you see, I mean, there is that expression, if you spot it, you got it. Like, you know, if you're seeing something out there in the world, it's always, we always have to bring it back to our minds. But the difference is that when we forgive it, like when we hand it over, when we're like, you know, really willing to see it as an expression of love, it loses its charge. Maybe we're still going to, like, see something, you know, like it, but it we're seeing it as a call for love instead of, like, getting that fiery, you know, feeling inside that I've felt many times.
Isn't there a possibility that you're seeing something in order to give you a perspective that is a loving perspective? Because, like, for example, Marianne Williamson, she's been having this pain in her shoulder, and she found out that it was this complicated thing she has to get surgery for. And she said that when she really sat with it to try to think about why is this happening, she felt like that it was to give her this deeper understanding of why people need to be healthcare secure. And she got this perspective from it. And I'm wondering if that's possible too, or if it's all ego that we need to undo, like that we need to heal the split mind, or if these things are sometimes shown to us because we're ready to see it from a place of love.
I think it's both. I think we're on the seeming journey that's already done, but it's the seeming journey of healing that split mind, and along the way, you know, again, experiences that the ego set up for us, when we repurpose them, when we're giving them to Holy Spirit and asking for, like, you know, a different purpose out of the situation, I mean, look at my anxiety. Like, the repurposing of it served to help me come into this work and, you know, share this with others. So I think that it can be both. It can serve to give us a changed perspective, and at the same time, it's all like step by step up the ladder of descent that we previously went down. So thank you for that, Cheryl. Did that help?
Yeah, I'm feeling what you I'm really feeling what you're saying, and I even got something that came up that said there's no reason for anyone to take on guilt regardless of where their perspective is taking them.
Yes, yes, that's great. And that's also applied to, like, you know, making others guilty. So, like, what, you know, the judgment that, like, you know, comes up in me toward, like, people who are attacking other students on Facebook, like, that's something I have to look at. That I can't brush that under the table because it's just going to hide there. So that's, you know, that's my work. So thank you for that. Cheryl. Oh, anybody else want to add? Yeah.
Corinne, this is Teresa.
Hi,
yeah,
Teresa.
Hi. I had something happen yesterday that I, you know, the racism and the white supremacy that we are dealing with in our world right now, a lot of that has resonated with me, and I've read some of the books that you recommended when you put out the original post about it. And so one thing that goes through my mind is silence is making us complicit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is really tricky based on, you know, in light of the conversation you were just having with, I think it was Cheryl, I'm sorry. So we have someone working in our home, mostly on our deck, putting up a railing system, taking down the old wood and putting up, you know, metal railing. And he works in California sometimes. And on more than one occasion in the last little while, he's referred to going over to, what does he call it, Mexicali. Okay, and I heard that. And I had a reaction inside myself to it. And then I thought, okay, what do I do? What do I say? And I struggled. But, you know, a lot of times I work a 12-step program too, and a lot of times, you know, we're kind of told to just not say anything. You know, just kind of just don't say anything. You don't always have to be the one to say something. But it bothered me, and I gave some thought to how I could address it if and when he would say it again. So I'm having a FaceTime with my granddaughter yesterday, who's 12, and she and I are discussing the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, she's 12. She's precious and innocent and trying to figure all this out, right? But engaged, I mean, much more so than I was at 12. So just as I'm saying Black Lives Matter to my granddaughter, you know, in our conversation on FaceTime, this gentleman walks in and says, "All lives matter." And I went, you're just not going to let me not respond to this. You know?
He's giving you more chances.
So, that idea of if we're silent, we're complicit kind of comes in, too. And so I'm doing dishes and praying, and I'm asking the Holy Spirit to come into my heart and give me the words. But I'm feeling that it's time to say something, right, and to just open the conversation. And so I did not do it perfectly. I know I didn't do it anywhere near perfectly. But I did come, even though I felt anxious inside, and maybe, you know, I shouldn't, if the Holy Spirit's really in there, maybe I wouldn't have felt anxious. But I felt some anxiety around it. But I did say I thought we needed to talk about it, and just to try to explain how, when you say all lives matter, you know, when people that believe Black Lives Matter, and in that, brown, indigenous, you know, everybody that's not white, right? Mm-hmm. So I was trying to explain, and I actually did a little Googling to think, how do I discuss this? You know, that if you went to a cancer, and I don't know if we've talked about this on this call, but if you go to a cancer, breast cancer fundraiser, you wouldn't go in and say, well, kidney cancer and colon cancer and what about brain cancer, you know? So I tried to just kind of frame it like that, you know, and that it's such a big moment because of what we have seen in the last several months. And because he was saying, well, it's going overboard, and, you know, anyway. So what, where does all this fit into the conversation we're just having in terms of,
great question.
Am I seeing it because I'm a racist, you know? I mean,
I'm sorry, what was that question? Are you seeing it because you're a racist? Is that what you just said?
Right. Because that's kind of in the framework of what you guys were just talking about. So I'm ready to hear your answer. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you. I had so much come up. First of all, it is always about what you did, like asking Holy Spirit for the words, and we have to recognize that part of our learning to have the words means we need to educate ourselves, to have the language, to have, you know, the tools. That's where it's been so helpful, you know, reading the books that I recommended and obviously many others that are out there. So we have that language, you know, that the Holy Spirit can use for us to speak. If we spot it, we got it. So we, all of us, outside of form, made this dream. We set it up so there would be differences and haves and have-nots and oppressors and those who are oppressed. Like the ego, you know, made this whole thing up. So is the thing with the U.S. is that, like, and I can only speak to the U.S. at this time, but I know this exists elsewhere. It was literally, the system was set up on purpose to keep black people down and elevate those of us with white skin. And those people who set it up that way are long gone, they've died, and here we are now, the system is still doing what it was set up to do. Those of us who have been, I'll speak for myself, white girl, you know, clueless, having her eyes opened finally a little bit, have had the privilege of not having to, you know, that I can just, like, turn away from this. So I would say, yeah, it doesn't, like, whatever the issue is, you spot it, you got it. If I spot racism, it's reminding me I got it in my mind. If I spot sickness, it's reminding me I'm believing that sickness, you know, that I'm a body or that sickness is possible. So, yes, we always need to take it back to our mind. And one of the things that I heard recently that I just thought was so profound, this was a podcast on being. Freedom Cartwright actually shared the link on her Facebook page. It's On Being with Krista Tippett. She's the interviewer, and she was interviewing Robin DiAngelo, and the man who wrote the book, My Grandmother's Hands, he's a trauma therapist. I'm blanking on his name. And he basically said that either you are actively trying to undo, you know, this like system that I just spoke to, or you are, if you say you're not racist, it actually means you're like complicit in the system. Or, like, you're either an out there racist, like a white supremacist who's proud of it, or you're like closet and you don't know it, which I thought was pretty profound. So I would say, yeah. I mean, anything we spot, it's always a reminder to come back to our minds. We have work to do. This wouldn't be showing up in our awareness if it wasn't ours to heal and to look at and to really do some deep work. It's no cause for guilt. That's the thing, is that this is such a guilt button pressing topic that I think those of us in white bodies have felt it a little bit and we freak out. But if we spot it, we got it is a great reminder, I think, even with the topic of race. So I just kind of gave you a long-winded answer, but I hope that was helpful. So
it was helpful, and I gave you a long-winded question. So thank you. I appreciate it, Corinne.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
Corinne,
I heard, who did I hear first? I think I heard Nikki. Who was first?
Yes. Hi, Corinne. So I want to piggyback on the last question that just came up, but with a different scenario, because the answer had a lot of specifics for the Black Lives Matter. Today we had my family over, and my older niece has been on my last nerve lately. So I've been saying, okay, Holy Spirit, I got to give this to you. And then I just kept rolling with it today, and it was like one thing after the other, and I was just done by the time she got here. And then I saw, and I'm not, like, I'm that nice aunt, you know, I'm usually kumbaya, right? Fun aunt. But I saw her be very mean to my baby niece. I was so mad, right? And I was like, just get this big niece out of my face, right? So I come to the call. After they left, my husband and I were on and on about my big niece. Oh, my God, what was with her today? She was on the phone. She was being a jerk. Da, da, da. So, you know, I get on the call, and we're talking about, like, you know, we're all these 100 little things. I'm like, yes, Jesus, you got me, right? But now in this last question, you know, I want to proclaim innocence that, well, I would never be mean. But, yeah, I wasn't snotty. You know, I wasn't outright mean to my big niece, but I was mean internally. So my question here is, okay, I recognize within me their stuff. Do I just keep turning it to the Holy Spirit? Or when it's one of those where, you know, you spot it, you got it, is there more work that I can do here? More, I want to be able to have a conversation with my big niece and say, what the frick's going on with us or something?
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Yeah,
and this
so
is
more
where,
like asking general.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you brought up this example because family and other roles and relationships is a big trigger. You know, I've talked about that too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, we can say you spot it, you got it. If you're being triggered, you can take it down to the level of if you're being triggered by anybody, it's showing you that you believe that you are a body. Like, we can get like down to that really super basic. Oh, sorry, I was talking with my hands and I just nearly flung my glasses off my face. So we can, you know, immediately take it down to that level. This triggering situation is about turning to Holy Spirit and asking for words that you can, you know, it brought up something in you. It's going to be helpful probably for you to talk to your older niece and asking for Holy Spirit and help in, you know, in having the words. So, you know, it's funny, like kids, yes, are loving and innocent, and yes, we see their egos come out too. we see it with animals also. You know, they have egos also. So children can benefit from feedback. Whether or not she's going to want to hear it is another thing, but it can be something that if, you know, you feel like you have to do it, that's your forgiveness work. That is your forgiveness work. It's always forgiving to the Holy Spirit and perhaps, in this case, talking it through.
Yes. Well, big niece is 34. Little niece is 7.
Oh, so. Oh my goodness. Okay, that's a very big, I'm thinking like 12 and like.
But it's like that same scenario where I just, because I started praying the Holy Spirit yesterday when she pushed my nerve. And I was like, Holy Spirit, help me because we got all tomorrow together. So just keep doing that. Just keep saying, okay, help me sit in meditation, do all the core things. You know, that's it.
I'm always going to say, are you doing the lessons yet?
You always say to me, I'm not. I'm the worst.
I'm always going to bring that up with you, Nikki, because I know how much you're going to benefit from those lessons. Like, I just know it. So I'm not going to let that go. But, I mean, we all have to also, I know that we've all had those moments, too, where we ask Holy Spirit and there's, like, you know, nothing. It's like radio silence. So, that's where, again, it can be really helpful to, in this case, like if you're feeling like you're asking for help and the words aren't coming, you know, maybe you have an inclination that you need to just start talking to your older niece. Something's got to shift. But this is your forgiveness work, and the whole workbook is about, you know, undoing, and it's about learning true forgiveness, because your older niece and your younger niece are perfect, innocent children of God who have forgotten that, and it's up to, part of your role is to remember that, even in the face of insane behavior.
Yeah, Corinne? When she started talking, I felt that. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. And I hear Paula.
It always comes back to page 90.
Page 90, which is what page in the CE?
Oh, 2, I got it right here. 229.
I must have decided wrongly, prayer. I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. Best prayer ever.
And then you move from there. you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
That really takes the heat off.
It does. It does.
Okay.
Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Did I hear Dawn?
Hi, Corinne.
No, who's that?
Oh, this is Courtney.
Oh, Courtney, hi.
Hi. Sorry, I've been jumping in. Hopefully it didn't interrupt too much. But
No, please, I just had a question.
It kind of has to go back to the face of innocence and also a question that was asked maybe two questions ago about racism or when someone says something wrong. I find myself sometimes, say I'm in an argument and my mom says something wrong, maybe it's offensive or just I don't agree with her. I do find myself sometimes, instead of turning to the Holy Spirit and saying, what should I say in this moment to bring love to this situation, kind of going, you know what, I'm just not going to talk to you. I'm going to go to my room, but in a loving way. And I kind of think that really goes back to the good ego of this idea of like, well, I'm innocent and you're not, you're wrong. And I'm not going to sit here and talk it out with you because all that matters is my healing. So I guess I would just, I don't know if I really have a question or just if that's been brought up for anyone else. And how to kind of work through that as a course student, because I do sometimes see myself getting on the high horse and saying I don't have to deal with anyone else. And maybe it's because it's just too difficult. But,
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, it also brings up that there is a fine line between, like, that face of innocence being the good one and just being like, you know what, I'm not dealing with this versus at times needing to also set a boundary that, like, for yourself, for where you are right now, it's not healthy for you to stay in, you know, that environment, and setting a boundary is, you know, okay. We can always obviously tune in for guidance about that. But I'll say this, that one of, I think, the biggest skills that we need to develop in everything and in the racism conversation is being able to calm our nervous systems. Freedom Cartwright, she was, for those of you who don't know Freedom, I definitely suggest friending her, following her on Facebook. She's a Black woman. She's a course teacher. She is just phenomenal in all ways. And she did a workshop on healing racism at the Community Miracle Center Boston Conference, which was completely focused on calming our nervous systems. So in whatever situations we are in that trigger us, be it a family situation, the situation that your mom, the situation that Nikki was saying about her niece, whatever the situation is, can we pause in that moment and remember God and remember truth and calm our nervous systems? Because when our nervous system is acting up, our nervous system is of the ego, but it's walking around with us in this body and it's here. So we can benefit by learning how to, number one, recognize that we're getting triggered, recognizing that our nervous system is starting to, you know, kick up and freak out, and pause. That might mean leaving. That might mean going for a walk. That might mean getting some kind of space to where then we can then come back to a space of being able to ask for help. And that might mean, you know, it might mean in that space we go to that page 90 prayer, or that page 90 prayer can bring us into a space of calming our nervous system. Again, that prayer is, I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself, but I can also decide otherwise. It goes on. I won't say the whole thing, but it's a really good one. So so you don't have to worry about, you know, I think it can be an ego tactic to try to analyze, is this, you know, my face of innocence right now? Like, you know, what exactly is going on? And trying to analyze the ego from the ego, which we can get stuck in. And instead, a quicker route is literally the shortest prayer that was ever written, help. and you know, maybe taking some space, maybe, you know, removing yourself. So there's a difference, I think, between stepping back. For instance, there's a racist post that somebody that I know posted that I absolutely am responding to, but I needed to, number one, calm my nervous system first, and number two, like, that was like a big act of self-care for me to do first. The post is going to be there. So, like, it might be that you remove yourself from that situation with your mom in that moment. And when you feel ready, when you're in a different mindset, when you're in a different space, maybe then it's something at that point that, you know, needs to be brought up. You'll know, because like I've shared in the past with my dad, my pattern with him was not healing, no matter how many times I tried to take it to the Holy Spirit, because I just didn't want to deal with it. And I finally had to come into a space that was from a space of calm and learn how to speak with him, how to speak up to him. And now we have a pretty good relationship. So I hope that was helpful, Courtney.
Yes. Thank you so much, Corinne.
Thank you, Courtney. Yay.
Corinne?
Yes.
Is it ever to walk away and just stay away?
If that's your guidance, if you know, again, it always comes back to guidance. So I think every scenario is a possibility if it's guided. And if you're not guided, you know, if you're walking away from an ego place because you just don't want to deal with it, you know, I'm going to use my face of innocence and try to be good and just leave, the lesson's going to come back. It's, you know, like we can't bypass our lessons. It'll show up in some other form.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's read another paragraph. Paragraph number 4. Beneath the face of innocence, there is a lesson that the concept of the self was made to teach. It is a lesson in a terrible displacement and a fear so devastating that the face which smiles above it must forever look away lest it perceive the treachery it hides. The lesson teaches this: I am the thing you made of me. And as you look on me, you stand condemned because of what I am. I'll come back to that, I promise. On this conception of the self, the world smiles with approval, for it guarantees the pathways of the world are safely kept, and those who walk on them will not escape. So beneath the face of innocence, we have a terrible guilt and fear that we've done something wrong by seemingly separating from God, but it's too much for us to bear that, so we project it on our brother. You know, we make the brother the one who is guilty, who does things to us that then affect us, and we can say, look what you've done to me. So that quote, that sentence in quotes, I am the thing you made of me, and as you look on me, you stand condemned because of what I am. Now, I know that sentence is confusing, but this plays out all the time, and I have a concrete example for you. Just like 3 days ago, it just happened. There's the whole COVID thing happening, and social distancing is supposed to be happening, and my husband is working up at the beach, and I was up there. He was on a quad, like a four-wheeler, because he's a supervisor, and he had another supervisor on the back of the quad. And it was a former supervisor on the back of the quad, and they stopped to talk to me as they were passing by. And the supervisor on the back of the quad, she's like, oh, sorry, I forgot my face mask. And she proceeds to just be like, blah, 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 really loud. And in my head, I'm like, she's spewing particles, you know, droplets all over the back of my husband's neck. So what I noticed, now I've noticed this before, so this isn't like a new revelation for me, but let's play this out. I've handed this all over already and worked through it, so I'm just going to play out like a scenario. Let's say that my husband got sick and then I got sick. For me to blame him, for me to say, look what you did to me. You gave me this. This is your fault. For me to do that is exactly what this sentence is saying. I am the thing you made of me, and as you look on me, you stand condemned because of what I am. What I would say in that situation from the ego would be, you are guilty. You did this to me. You are condemned because of this, but what I am doing in that is holding both of us hostage. I am calling on death for both of us because our healed body presented to our brother is affirming our brother's innocence. Our brother has done nothing to us. So your healing is showing others that they are innocent, that they've done nothing. So that, I hope, is a concrete example that, like, you know, had my husband gotten sick, given me something, and I then condemned him for it, that is this underlying ego mechanism in place, this terrible displacement where I'm actually, you know, I'm filled with guilt and fear because of my seeming separation, but I'm projecting this onto him, and I'm then, you know, pointing the finger, pointing blame to make that other guilty so I don't have to look at my own sense of guilt. This plays out in more ways than that, but that is my recent example for you. And I spotted it right away. I did feel, and I'll just share the scenario since we've been doing lots of examples tonight, I did feel like I needed to express to my husband, like, you know, what was that? What just happened? And then after that, I was able to be like, you know what? You are not guilty. Because I, in the past, have had a pattern with him of making him feel guilty, which now we are both, like, very clear about that, and I go into that space of, like Paula has said and used to say so many times in our in-person study group, not guilty. And I always picture, like, whacking a gavel. So it is always about telling our brother, no matter what he or she seems to be doing to us, can we stand in that space of still seeing their innocence, their guiltlessness, their doing nothing to us? This is that, it's like another way of saying, you spot it, you got it, with how we started the call. It's another way of saying, instead of saying you spot it, you got it, it's you are innocent. Everyone is innocent, and I am whole and complete, regardless of what it is they seem to be doing. And in establishing and affirming our innocence, that space in which we stand, we are freeing not only our brother and ourselves, we're freeing the sonship and doing leaps and bounds toward awakening for all of us, even though we're already there. So I hope that was a relatable example. And with that, we are at 9 o'clock, so I think that's a good spot to end. Are there any final quick comments before we say goodbye? Sounds like we're good. All righty. Thank you, everybody, so much. I love you all. Deep bow. Group hug.
Thank you, Corinne.
Thank you, Corinne.
Have a great week. Have a good night, everybody.
Love
I'll
you.
See you next week. Thank
bye
you.
Bye
love
now.
You all.
Thank you, Corinne. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.